Here's to trading skylines for tree lines in Wisconsin, to seeking adventures with no agenda, and traveling a little farther to get way closer. Here's to spending golden moments together and capping crisp days with campfire nights. Here's to you, Chicago. Come on up. Plan your fall getaway at travelwisconsin.com.
Hi, Tom Baudet here. Traveling with pets used to be simple. A leash, some food, and a prayer they wouldn't get car sick. But now, you've got pet car seats, anxiety jackets, even doggles. Well, with all your shelling out on pet travel gear, you might want to stop at Motel 6, where even the most lavishly accessorized pets always stay free. You can take the money you saved and buy them those high-performance hiking booties you've been eyeing. We'll leave the light on for you.
Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Thursday, August 22nd, 2024. Vice President Kamala Harris gives a primetime speech to accept the Democratic presidential nomination on this final night of the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. The uncommitted movement of delegates to the convention, which is opposed to the Democratic Party's support for Israel in the war in Gaza, stages a sit-in outside the arena in protest of not being allowed to have a speaker during the convention sessions. Growing reports that independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will end his run for the White House and endorse Republican nominee Donald Trump will get reaction from the Harris-Walz campaign and from Donald Trump. Donald Trump today campaigns in Arizona near the border with Mexico, talking about immigration and border security. And the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says his government will announce soon how it plans to deal with a freight rail stoppage in his country over disagreement between railroad companies and workers' unions. The supply chain disruptions could affect the U.S. economy as well. Story from AP. Vice President Kamala Harris closes out the Democratic National Convention Thursday night when she accepts her party's historic presidential nomination and seizes one of her few remaining opportunities to appeal to an audience of millions. Harris will lay out her vision for the country and prosecute her case against Republican Donald Trump, capping a whirlwind month that began when President Joe Biden ended his reelection bid and endorsed her to replace him atop the Democratic ticket. Harris has three objectives for her speech, according to a campaign official who spoke on condition of anonymity to discuss sensitive speech preparations. She'll share her background, rising from a middle-class family to protect others as a prosecutor, contrast her optimistic vision with Trump's dark agenda, and evoke a sense of patriotism, the official said. That was from Associated Press. During the morning Democratic National Convention news conference, Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey previewed the speech tonight of the Democratic presidential nominee.
And so tonight we're going to hear from Kamala Harris, and I am so excited. It's like a proud sibling. She and I served together in the Senate. I know who she is. I know what she's about. And I can't wait until America hears from her. And so let me tell you, I work in the Senate. Policy is important. Legislation is important. And I know she's going to talk a lot about that. I've had the privilege, again, these rare privileges you get in life, to work side by side with people, with a person, on the hardest, toughest issues in America, from health care to environmental justice, to economic justice. She and I partnered on some of the toughest issues. And the thing that the privilege I got was to see somebody who worked with me on the legislation as a senator and then got to watch her as a part of a leadership team actually get that legislation into law on so many issues that she and I worked at. And it's not necessarily the kind of issues that always the press wants to report on, but the economic instability of farmers. She and I were talking about everything from the overt history of injustice towards black farmers, but also just struggling farmers. We literally, thanks to Biden-Harris, just got billions of dollars out the door to help economically disadvantaged farmers. Environmental injustice. She and I went to work on those issues in the Senate. And then when she became vice president, she became in the White House the environmental justice champion. And we now, she showed up in Newark because two of us were so happy about it to announce that every lead service pipe in our city was out of the ground. On issue after issue, maternal mortality rates in America are horrific. We have one of the worst nations on maternal mortality. She and I went to work on those issues in the Senate. And thanks to Joe Biden, We now have an expansion of Medicaid coverage, more people with health insurance than ever before. And so the policy matters. Everybody should understand that the vision she has for this country in terms of the actual things that she wants to do are important. I hope we talk about that. But I want to end by saying to you that something that to me that is as important, if not in many ways, fuels the policy. The leaders that she and I revere from the civil rights movement knew that, yes, we're working towards voting rights or civil rights, but there's something about the spirit of the country that has to heal first. To make the legislation possible, you've really got to tap in to the heart, to the soul, to the spirit of the country. And she knows how you win. Not Donald Trump's way. She knows that when Martin Luther King went down to Selma, he didn't beat Bull Connor in Birmingham because he brought bigger dogs or bigger fire hoses because he hated more. No, they won in Birmingham because they inspired the moral imagination of a nation. They called to the conscience of our country. And so I love what Maya Angelou says. And when you're listening to, I think, one of the greatest speeches we're going to hear in this election season tonight, I want you all to remember what Maya Angelou says, that people often forget what you say, but they're never going to forget how you make them feel. I know how Walt made me feel last night. And what I'm excited about today is to see my colleague, my friend, my sister in the Senate share her heart with America to appeal to the better angels of our nation, to have a tradition in our presidency that Donald Trump betrayed. He never said malice towards none and charity towards all. There is a tradition in our great presidents that tell us we're not going to be about fear and smear. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. Those presidents that appeal to the best of who we are in the worst of our times to help us to get to higher ground, that's the feeling that America will get tonight. Weeping has endured, but joy is coming. That is what has me so excited, hoarse from yelling. I am tired, but I am telling you tonight, I will be on my feet with millions of other Americans saying, yes, yes, a new day is coming.
Senator Cory Booker, Democrat from New Jersey, at the Democratic National Convention daily media briefing in Chicago this morning. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump posting on his Truth Social platform, "I will be doing a live play-by-play on Truth Social of Comrade Kamala Harris's speech tonight at the Democrat National Convention in Chicago. We will start at 10 p.m. Eastern and be covering and commenting on some of the earlier speeches made prior to hers. We will expose all of her radicalism, the horrible job she did at the border, crime and foreign relations, and her weaponization against her political opponent using corrupt prosecutors and courts in New York, Washington, D.C., and Atlanta. I hope everybody will be following along on Truth tonight." That post from Donald Trump. About those other speakers tonight at the Democratic National Convention's final night, the DNC Executive Director, Alex Hornbrook, was at the morning news conference.
The theme for tonight is For Our Future. And as we conclude our incredible week of organizing, celebrating, and doing the vital work of our party, we'll use the final night in the United Center to show the American people how Vice President Harris and Governor Waltz are committed to fighting for a brighter future for everyone. Tonight, we're going to hear from Vice President Harris as she tells her story directly to the country. And we'll hear from leaders across the party, including the Honorable Deb Haaland and Marsha Fudge, Senators Padilla, Casey, Warren and Kelly, Governor Healey, Gretchen Whitmer and Roy Cooper, and Representatives Clark, Kinzinger, McBath, Neguse, Frost, Slotkin, Allred, and Gallego, the Tennessee Three, Gabby Giffords, gun violence survivors, and gun safety advocates. The final night here of our convention is going to showcase our vision for the future and make clear that Americans are ready to fight and win with the Harris-Waltz ticket.
Alex Hornbrook is Democratic National Convention Executive Director at the morning news conference held by the convention and the Harris-Walz campaign staff in Chicago on this final day of the convention. C-SPAN's live gavel-to-gavel coverage begins at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And you can hear all of the convention speeches on C-SPAN's 2024 Campaign Trail podcast feed shortly after they happen. You can find and follow C-SPAN's 2024 Campaign Trail podcast wherever you get your podcasts. More about Vice President Kamala Harris's speech tonight accepting the Democratic presidential nomination. C-SPAN spoke this morning with Tabitha Bonilla, Northwestern University political science professor.
I'm a political scientist, and I think about how voters understand political messaging from candidates, but also how they understand messaging around policies.
So when it comes to messaging and what the vice president faces tonight in this acceptance speech, what do you think are the things that she has to achieve on that front?
Sure. So I think the most important thing to understand about conventions is they want to excite the voter base. And this one's a little different because she's only been visible for about 30 days in the position of presidential nominee. So she has to both excite the base and assure them that she is capable and has the experience to do well in this position. So I think she'll start and try and appeal a lot to some of the groups that the Democrats have been worried about showing up and participating, Black voters, young voters, Latine voters. And I think that she'll try first and foremost to foster excitement to get the party members out, registering voters and people out to the polls. But I also think that she's going to try and remind voters about what Democrats feel is at stake in this election, which is the idea that democracy was attacked on January 6th and that Donald Trump is responsible for this. So I think we'll see a lot of that reminder. We'll also see reminders about abortion and what has happened on that front. I don't think we'll see a lot of specifics on policy, which I think people are asking for because they haven't seen a lot of her plans. But I think she'll give us hints that the Biden White House is better than the Trump White House, that she played a part in that, and that she will continue this upward trajectory.
Tabitha Bonilla, Northwestern University political science professor, joining C-SPAN on our Washington Journal morning program this morning. Another day at the Democratic National Convention means more state delegations holding breakfasts around Chicago. The acting Labor Secretary Julie Sue was at the breakfast hosted by the Nevada Democratic Party, and she spoke about working with Vice President Kamala Harris when they were both in the California government.
I am somebody who knows Kamala Harris. You know, everybody's telling their stories about her. And that says something about somebody, right? When from a whole, throughout their lives, somebody's got a lot of stories. And my relationship with her really began as a professional one. I was the California Labor Commissioner, so it was my job to protect workers throughout the state from wage theft, to make sure that every worker who went to work came home and got a just day's pay for a hard day's work. And Kamala Harris was the Attorney General at that time. And I had launched a campaign called Wage Theft is a Crime to make clear that when working people get their wages stolen from them, it's not just, you know, it's not just a civil matter. It's actually a criminal thing to do. And as the Attorney General, she reached out to me to say, hey, let's work together. Let's do this together, because I also want to make sure that the poorest, most invisible workers understand that government has got their back. And that's the kind of leader that Kamala Harris is. She's somebody who recognizes that she doesn't have all the answers, and I don't have all the answers, but together we can come up with better answers. And she doesn't have the power to do everything, and neither does anybody else, but together we have more powers to help the vulnerable, to make sure that government can and does work for working people and for invisible people. And so that's who she is. And over those years, then we developed a relationship. We developed a friendship. She started an entire unit in the Attorney General's office to serve low-wage working people. And that unit stays, it's still working to this day, over a decade later. So that, you know, you'll hear the big vision, the big policy issues. We know what those are. She wants to build an opportunity economy where every single Nevadan, every single American has real opportunity. But she also knows how to move the levers of government to do that and to bring people together to do it. And so I'm just so proud to see her now at this place. And how, what'd you guys think of Tim Walz? I know. So, die. I thought he was so lovely also. And of course, you know, he's somebody who has proven in his state what you can do with the right leadership, right? And how you can pass policies that actually lift up working people, lift up working families. And that is what this ticket is all about. It's about making sure that seniors in Nevada have affordable health care and affordable prescription medication. It's about, you know, continuing to cap the price of insulin, but also expand the number of drugs that have affordable prices. It's about extending the child tax credit to make sure that no child grows up in poverty, either in Nevada, bless you, or anywhere in the entire country. So all of those policies are what we need in this country.
The acting Labor Secretary Julie Sue at the Nevada delegation to the Democratic National Convention breakfast in Chicago. Story from CNN, Vice President Kamala Harris and second gentleman Doug Emhoff both marked their 10-year wedding anniversary with social media posts on Thursday, the same day Harris will formally accept her party's historic presidential nomination. Happy anniversary, Dougie. I wouldn't want to be on this journey with anyone but you, Harris posted on social media with a photo of the couple. Emhoff shared a 40-second long video with photos and videos of the two, concluding with a photo of them on their wedding day. That was from CNN. Doug Emhoff also writing on that post, 10 years of marriage, forever to go. Happy anniversary, @VP. I love you. There have been more than a handful of celebrities at this year's Democratic National Convention, actresses and actors, including Kerry Washington, Mindy Kaling, Tony Goldwyn, also talk show host Oprah Winfrey, comedian Kenan Thompson, musicians John Legend, Sheila E., and Stevie Wonder. Today, actress and singer Cheryl Lee Ralph was at the Democratic National Convention Women's Caucus meeting.
I see you out here, a sea of the feminine power. And you know, like the song, we've got the power.
Yes.
We've got the power. Right now, it is like this. Within our reach,
yes.
From Seneca Falls, from the walk of Sojourner, ain't I a woman, to this right here. It is up to us,
yes, ma'am. Yes.
Those of us who know better, to help and encourage other women to understand there is nothing wrong with fighting for, supporting,
yes,
and voting for women. Has been set from Harriet Tubman, from Eleanor Roosevelt, from Mary McLeod Bethune, from Shirley Chisholm, making a way for all of us. Believe it when they say that a vote for a woman is a vote for all of us.
Actress and singer Cheryl Lee Ralph at the Democratic National Convention Women's Caucus meeting today in Chicago. Also speaking there, the U.S. House Speaker Emerita, Nancy Pelosi, Democrat from California, and Congresswoman Robin Kelly, Democrat from Illinois. WLS in Chicago writes the delegates from the uncommitted movement are sitting outside the United Center Thursday morning calling for the DNC to include a pro-Palestinian speaker. A group of about 40 unconfirmed delegates and supporters spent the night outside the United Center on the sidewalk and remained there Thursday morning. They said they're waiting for a call, hopefully from party leadership, saying they've changed their mind and they will allow a pro-Palestinian speaker to address the DNC. But so far, the answer is no. On night three of the Democratic National Convention, parents of American hostage Hirsch Goldberg in the October 7th attack in Israel spoke on stage pleading for the release of those held captive in Gaza. That was reporting from WLS. Georgia State Representative Rua Rahman, a Palestinian American, spoke to reporters Wednesday night when the sit-in began.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Rua Rahman. I am a Georgia State Representative. I'm an elected Democrat. I come from the swing state of Georgia. We are not here to create any divisions. As my colleagues have said over and over and over again, the only reason we are here, the only reason we are here is to ensure that Donald Trump will never make it to the White House and save the lives of the people that we love. It's about the fact that today I watched my party say our tent can fit anti-choice Republicans, but it can't fit an elected official like me. I do not understand. I do not understand why being a Palestinian has become disqualifying in this country. I don't know how much more we have to prove. All of us have decade or more long resumes working for this party because we know that this party is the only one that's ever tried to meet the promise of our country. We are here to literally save the soul of our party. I do not understand why that is a bad thing. This would have truly and sincerely been a beautiful gesture to show this party cares about the cries of an Israeli child the same way they care about the cries of a Palestinian child. We are not asking for too much. All we wanted was to be on that stage and show people desperate for hope there is something to hope for.
Georgia State Representative Rua Rahman, a delegate to the Democratic National Convention, also a Palestinian American, at a sit-in outside the United Center Wednesday night in Chicago. That video posted by Democracy Now!. The sit-in continued into today. And this morning at the Democratic National Convention Daily News Conference, a reporter questioned Michael Tyler, communications director for the Harris-Walz campaign.
There's been a lot of talk about unity this week, so why won't y'all allow a Palestinian speaker to address the convention? And by simply saying that Trump would be worse for Arab Americans, is that not the campaign taking their votes for granted?
No, we're absolutely not taking their votes for granted. I think as it relates to uncommitted delegates at this convention, we're proud and glad that they are here. We've worked to engage them throughout the convention. We're proud of the fact that we held panel conversations with members of the uncommitted movement. We're proud that the vice president herself engaged with leadership in the uncommitted movement in Michigan a couple of weeks ago. That's why the campaign has continued to engage with leadership of the uncommitted movement throughout this convention. And I think what they will see, what folks who continue to demonstrate and protest will see, is a vice president, what has already been clear, and what they'll continue to see for the rest of this campaign, is a vice president who is committed to ending the violence, ending the conflict, making sure that we resolve this conflict with a permanent ceasefire that allows Israel to fully secure itself, that fully continues and make sure that we have full humanitarian aid, but also make sure that Gazans are able to peacefully live and prosper in Gaza. That's what she's going to relentlessly fight for as president of the United States, and it does stand in stark contrast to our opponent, whose only North Star is what benefits him, does not care about national security, does not care about global security, is only interested in his own personal self-interest. And so when you're looking for somebody who's going to serve as commander-in-chief, when you're looking at temperament, judgment, ability to handle complex global situations, there's only one candidate in this race who fits the bill, and that's the vice president.
Michael Tyler is communications director for the Harris-Walz campaign at this morning's Democratic National Convention news conference in Chicago. Story from CBS, a new round of urgent talks aimed at hammering out a ceasefire agreement between Israel and Hamas was expected to kick off Thursday in Cairo, a follow-up to quickly announced negotiations held last week in Doha. The results may show whether the optimism projected by the White House over the past week has been based more on reality or wishful thinking. One of the biggest sticking points between Israel and Hamas getting attention ahead of the talks was whether Israel would agree to pull back its military from Gaza's southern border with Egypt, the so-called Philadelphi Corridor. That was from CBS. Michael Tyler from the Harris-Walz campaign was also asked today about independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Washington Post writes that Kennedy announced that he will address the nation about the path forward for his campaign on Friday in Arizona amid advanced discussions with former President Donald Trump and his campaign team about dropping out of the race and endorsing the Republican nominee, according to multiple people familiar with the conversations.
What's the strategy to court RFK's voters, particularly if he endorses Trump tomorrow?
Two things. Number one, RFK was obviously funded in large part by MAGA donors. He parroted a lot of MAGA talking points throughout the campaign, so I don't think it would come as any surprise to us should he formally endorse Donald Trump today. But my message is not for him. My message is for many of the undecided voters, many of whom found a home with him at the early stages of this campaign. If they were feeling disaffected about the state of the race, if they were looking for a new way forward, if they're looking for somebody who's actually going to fight for their interests, their values, if they're looking for somebody who understood as it relates to the personal decisions that they make in their lives, the government should get the hell out of the way, then there's a home for them in Kamala Harris's campaign. And we'll do all the work necessary to court those voters and make sure that they understand the fundamental stakes and the threat posed by Donald Trump and the path forward, the positive vision that Kamala Harris is campaigning on for the rest of this campaign.
Michael Tyler with the Harris-Waltz campaign at the morning Democratic National Convention news conference in Chicago. Again, live coverage of this fourth and final night of the convention begins on C-SPAN Radio and C-SPAN Television, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. And Vice President Kamala Harris is expected to give her speech accepting the presidential nomination in the 10 o'clock hour. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump was asked today about the reports about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. dropping out and endorsing him. It was during Donald Trump's stop in Sierra Vista, Arizona.
I haven't, but I'm hearing reports. I have a lot of respect for RFK Jr. You know that. I've known him a long time. Very smart. A little bit different, and that's okay. But he's a very smart guy. He's loved by a lot of people, and I'm hearing that he wants to leave. Don't forget, he was treated very unfairly. I think he would have beaten Biden in a primary, the Kennedy name and him in particular. I think he would have beaten Biden in a primary, and they made it impossible. They said you have to get 70% of the vote just to qualify or something. They created standards that nobody could have met. Biden couldn't have met him. And I think he would have lost Biden, and they really treated him very badly. Then he went out as an independent, and it's a tough thing to do, independent. You know, it wasn't set up that way, the country. It's really a two-party system, whether people like it or not, Republican, Democrat. And I have spoken to him in the past over the last number of months, but not recently. But there are rumors that he's going to make an endorsement. That would be a great honor for me. Great honor.
I don't know.
I can't say that. But I know we're in the same state, so we're not very far away. But I can't tell you that yet. No plans have been made at this moment.
Donald Trump, the Republican presidential nominee today in Arizona, and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is scheduled to give an address in Arizona on Friday. We'll have more from Donald Trump talking about border security. He was not far from the U.S.-Mexico border today. It's coming up in a few minutes here on C-SPAN Radio. But more about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., Washington Post article says the latest moves follow a clear shift in the public posture of the Kennedy campaign after a last-ditch attempt through intermediaries to reach out to the Democratic campaign of Vice President Kamala Harris in early August. The Kennedy campaign commissioned polling to show how Harris could improve her standing in the race if she announced that Kennedy would have a cabinet-level position, and then attempted to share those results with the Harris team, according to campaign officials, and a copy of the polling results obtained by the Washington Post. Harris allies have rebuffed requests for a meeting and dismissed Kennedy as a MAGA-funded fringe candidate. After that statement, Kennedy and his allies have grown increasingly fierce in their denunciations of the Democratic Party. Reporting by the Washington Post. And Washington Today continues in a moment.
Hi, I'm Susan Swain. Campaign 2024 has evolved in some unexpected ways. And from now until Election Day, C-SPAN promises you unfiltered coverage of the candidates as they battle to win the White House and Congress. You may not know that C-SPAN is a private company that operates without a dime of government money. And like many media organizations, we've been impacted by cord cutting. This summer, we are asking for you to help support our unbiased political coverage with a donation. Here's the good news. 100% of your contribution, large or small, directly supports C-SPAN operations. And best of all, an anonymous donor has pledged to match your donation dollar for dollar. You can find out more at cspan.org/donate. Help ensure that C-SPAN's unique, long-form coverage of politics is here to stay. Visit cspan.org/donate. Thank you for watching, and thanks so much for your support.
With newly reformulated TriClean Gas from Citgo, you're good to go. But good to go where? Good to go to your bowling league?
Woo! That's a turkey, turkeys!
Good to go exotic bird shopping?
Pick me, pick me!
New TriClean Gas from Citgo. Now you're good to go.
Welcome back to Washington Today, available as a podcast wherever you find your podcasts and on the free C-SPAN Now mobile app. Associated Press from Sierra Vista, Arizona. Donald Trump is traveling to the shrub-dotted hills of Arizona near the U.S.-Mexico border to campaign Thursday on immigration, his signature issue since launching his first successful presidential bid 9 years ago. The visit is the fourth in a series of events held in battleground states this week to try to draw the focus away from Democrats' celebration of Vice President Kamala Harris's presidential nomination in Chicago. The Trump campaign placed a lectern with a sign that says, "The Southern Border," on a dirt road between a border wall and piles of steel beams. The theme of Thursday's visit is Make America Safe Again, and Trump plans to meet with people whose relatives were attacked or slain by immigrants who arrived in the country illegally during the Biden administration. Nearby snipers stood at an elevated position, their eyes and weapons pointed toward Mexico. That was the reporting from Associated Press. Here's some of the remarks from Donald Trump at that event.
They've unleashed a deadly plague of migrant crime on our country by not doing their job. And all of that plank and all of that very expensive wall, it's also got tremendous electronic capability inside of it. It's got wires for cameras and everything else that you can have. It's the Rolls Royce of walls, I can tell you. It's very hardened steel outside. 7,000-pound concrete inside and rebar inside of the concrete, all different, all very hard to get through. And it's sad to see it sitting here. We have crime going on up the road. In this direction, it's as far as you can see is wall. We have no problem there, but they come in where they refuse to put it up. That was when I first realized that they want open borders. I thought nobody could be so foolish or stupid to want open borders and have the world's criminal population pour into our country. That's what's happening. But it shattered so many families' lives and stolen so many incredible young lives. And it's also really badly hurt our black population and our Hispanic population because these people are taking their jobs. The jobs now are down, way down for the black population and the Hispanic population because we have millions of illegal aliens that are poured into our country. They've taken the jobs of African Americans and Hispanics. And that was obvious to me. Next is going to be unions. You watch. The unions are going to start going wild because those jobs are going to be taken too. We're honored to really be here with these incredible people and in particular with some grieving families. And this is a group of people that I've gotten to know. They're incredible people. They've lost a loved one. And thousands of others are out there. And they are grieving also. But they're not out with you and sitting in this hot sun. I will say this, that at least it gives us a good reason. We're doing something for those incredible people that we'll be talking about very shortly because we can't let it happen to other people. We can't let what you're going through happen to other families.
Former President Donald Trump, Republican presidential nominee this year, today in Sierra Vista, Arizona, about 20 miles from the border with Mexico. Another AP article, the Supreme Court on Thursday rejected a Republican push that could block more than 41,000 Arizona voters from casting ballots for president in the state that Democratic President Joe Biden won by less than 11,000 votes 4 years ago. In a 5-4 order, the high court allowed some enforcement of regulations barring people from voting if they don't provide proof of citizenship when they register. The justices acted on an emergency appeal filed by state and national Republicans that sought to give full effect to voting measures enacted in 2022 following Biden's narrow win over Donald Trump. The legal fight will continue in lower courts. That was from AP. On the issue of border security and immigration, there was a 2-minute ad played Wednesday night at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and it had clips of Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic presidential nominee.
I have a question for you.
Who really wants a solution at our border?
Our administration worked on the most significant border security bill in decades. Some of the most conservative Republicans in Washington, D.C. supported the bill. Even the Border Patrol endorsed it.
And that bill included thousands of new border agents and personnel, new technology that can detect and stop fentanyl, more judges, and faster asylum processing. For the first time in decades, a chance at a real bipartisan solution.
But at the last minute, Trump directed his allies in the Senate to vote it down.
They're blaming it on me. I said, that's okay, please blame it on me, please.
He tanked the bipartisan deal because he thought it would help him win an election. Which goes to show Donald Trump does not care about border security. He only cares about himself.
The real difference is...
I was the Attorney General of a border state. In that job, I walked underground tunnels between the United States and Mexico on that border with law enforcement officers. I went after transnational gangs, drug cartels, and human traffickers that came into our country illegally. I prosecuted them in case after case, and I won. So here is my pledge to you. As president, I will bring back the border security bill that Donald Trump killed, and I will sign it into law and show Donald Trump what real leadership looks like.
That video was played at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago Wednesday night with clips from previous speeches by Vice President Kamala Harris, the Democratic presidential nominee. Today, Senator J.D. Vance, Republican of Ohio, the Republican vice presidential nominee, campaigned about immigration and border security in Georgia. He answered reporters' questions, and one was about that bipartisan Senate bill.
Dudes, Fox 5 Atlanta. How do you respond to Democrats who say that they have tried unsuccessfully on Capitol Hill to pass a border security bill and that, in fact, it's been Trump and Republicans who held it up?
Yeah, ma'am, I appreciate that question. And for those of you who couldn't heard it, how do we respond to Democrats who say that they tried to pass a border security bill? My response, ma'am, is I was there in the Senate when they tried to pass that border security bill, and it had nothing to do with border security. It had to do with codifying a lot of the executive orders of Kamala Harris and Joe Biden that actually further opened the southern border. For example, the policy of catch and release. This is where a person comes into our country, they claim asylum, and then they're released into our country with no follow-up. Sometimes they don't come back for 5 years, sometimes they don't come back for 10 years. Kamala Harris and Joe Biden implemented catch and release through executive order. Their so-called border security package would have made catch and release the law of the land. So even if you have a guy like Donald Trump come in, he can't undo it because Congress has codified one of the worst open border policies in America. Everybody knows, everybody with an ounce of common sense knows, when Kamala Harris became president, she said she wanted to, vice president, she said, I want to suspend deportations, and she did. I want to stop Donald Trump's Remain in Mexico policy, and she did. The reason why we have an open border is because Kamala Harris undid the policies of Donald J. Trump. We bring Donald J. Trump back, we bring those policies back, we will get border security, but you've got to have a president who wants to do this stuff.
Republican vice presidential nominee Senator J.D. Vance of Ohio today in Valdosta, Georgia, taking reporters' questions after giving some opening remarks about immigration and border security. The latest Real Clear polling average of polls in Georgia has Republican nominee Donald Trump ahead of Democratic nominee Kamala Harris in the presidential race by 1 percentage point, 48 to 47. The issue of immigration also came up this week at a sideline event to the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. It was hosted by the University of Chicago Institute of Politics Youth Vote Fest. And the speaker, Congresswoman Delia Ramirez.
You came here today. You're already engaged. If you can just shout out one thing that matters, like nothing else for you. What is that thing? I'm going to give you to three. One, two, three. Go. All right, I want you to do it one more time, and I want you to do it louder so that people out there hear us too. One, two, three. I have a feeling that y'all are already doing something about the thing that you care most about, and it's why you're here today. Am I right? Am I right? So I want to tell you this. Yes, we need you to vote, but raise your hand if you're voting this election. I knew it, because you're here. And those of you that didn't raise your hand, okay, raise your hand again if you're voting this election. All right, y'all, look at who's not raising their hand. I'm not saying pressure, but put some pressure. I know you're voting already. And I'm thankful that you're voting. But here's the thing that I need. I need you to get everyone else that you know that can vote to go and vote. Here's why. I told you that I'm a daughter of Guatemalan immigrants. What I didn't tell you is I'm the only member of Congress right now married to someone who is undocumented. I'm married to a man who came to this country when he was a little boy, 14 years old. He's now 39 years old, and we are still fighting for him to be able to have a green card. So I need you to talk to your friends that can vote and say, listen, I need you to vote for those that cannot vote yet. Because when you vote and you get more people to vote, you make it possible for us to do the kind of things, the kind of policy work that we've been BSing in excuses and not passing regardless of who is in office. So who's gonna help me get a couple people more, maybe 5, 10, 15 people to also vote? All right, see, there you go, y'all. Y'all saw that, right?
Congresswoman Adelia Ramirez, Democrat from Illinois, at the Youth Vote Fest hosted by the University of Chicago Institute of Politics on Wednesday, part of the programming related to the Democratic National Convention, which finishes up its fourth and final day tonight. The Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement at Tufts University estimates that more than 40 million members of Generation Z will be eligible to cast ballots this fall, and 8 million of them aged into the electorate for the first time this election cycle. C-SPAN's coverage of the Democratic National Convention also includes a look at how it affects the city of Chicago, and we spoke with Rich Gamble, interim CEO and president of Choose Chicago, which promotes business and tourism.
How many people do you anticipate coming to the city?
We anticipate 50,000 people. Of that 50,000 people, about 5,000 delegates and affiliate groups or affinity groups. We are also expecting 15,000 members of the media nationally and internationally.
How do those numbers compare to numbers of other big events like New Year's or like 4th of July?
Well, let's just use 2 weekends ago. We had the Aaron Water Show that brought tens, almost probably hundreds of thousands of people down. We had the Crosstown Classic where our Chicago Cubs played our Chicago White Sox. We had the Metallica concert. Each of those things, we had the Babilican Day Parade, one of the largest African-American back-to-school parades that celebrates that culture and community. All of those things happen the same weekend. So each of them with tens of thousands of people. Chicago's built for this. What makes the DNC special, it's a national special security event, and so there's a lot more infrastructure and coordination with our federal government and our local law enforcement and public safety committees.
All those people coming in must have an economic impact. What does that look like?
Well, past political conventions have had roughly $150 to $200 million economic impact. Now that's larger than most of our conventions because it's a national special security event. So you have a lot of, you know, Homeland Security, Secret Service, FBI, all of our local public safety community working together and putting security perimeters and those kind of things in place. So it's a little bit more than in terms of economic impact than what you would experience in one of our regular conventions because you don't have that same level of security in place for it. Even the other conventions are in the tens of millions of dollars of economic impact and employs people from all over the city.
Rich Gamble, interim CEO and president of Choose Chicago, part of C-SPAN's interview in Chicago, part of our Democratic National Convention coverage. Wall Street today, the Dow down 177, NASDAQ down 299, S&P down 50. From CNN, Canada's two major freight railroads have shut their operations, according to management of the two companies, locking out 9,000 members of the Teamsters Union who operate the trains and dealing a potential blow to both the Canadian and U.S. economies. The Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau made a statement about this outside a manufacturer in Sherbrooke, Quebec.
I just visited a little incredibly innovative manufacturer here that works for Tesla and others in some really high-performing, high-quality manufacturing. But I talked to us also about the fact that they are going to be impacted if a shutdown of the rail system continues for much longer. And that's something that is an impact right across the country, from workers to businesses to farmers to consumers who are going to be impacted. That's why we are on this. We're taking it so seriously. The minister is engaged directly. We are not taking this lightly, obviously, because Canadians across the country are worried about it, and we will have more to say shortly on what we're doing to make sure that the right solution is found quickly for the economy.
The Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau speaking to reporters in Sherbrooke, Quebec. The Washington Post article on this reads, the Teamsters say the railways are requesting that the union make concessions on crew scheduling, rail safety, and fatigue management, echoing union concerns at the heart of a threatened 2022 rail strike in the United States. Meanwhile, the railroads say they have offered significant pay increases and addressed concerns about scheduling. Teamsters Canada, which represents nearly 10,000 rail workers at the two companies, has been without contracts at the company since the end of 2023. That was from the Washington Post. From Newsweek, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky made a significant visit to the northeastern region of Sumy on Thursday, marking his first trip to the border area since launching a bold cross-border offensive more than 2 weeks ago. The operation has led to the capture of dozens of Russian villages and the strategic town of Sudtsa. Zelensky announced on the social media platform X that Ukrainian forces had secured control over another settlement in Russia's Kerch region and had captured more Russian soldiers, which he referred to as replenishing the exchange fund for potential prisoner swaps. That was from Newsweek. The fighting going on there came up at today's Pentagon briefing with Deputy Press Secretary Sabrina Singh.
Sabrina, do you support Ukraine's incursion into Russia?
So we're supporting Ukraine and what they need on the battlefield right now. As you heard us say time and again, we are getting a better understanding of what the Ukrainians are doing in Kursk. Our policy does allow for them to engage in those counterfires, but we are still supporting Ukraine in what they need on the battlefield, and that is through different presidential drawdown packages. That's not going to change.
You said something similar last mm-hmm. week, that you're still trying to learn what they're doing. I think it's pretty obvious what they're doing. I think for the whole world, it's obvious what they're doing. Why can't the Pentagon publicly support Ukraine's incursion into Russia?
Well, Lucas, to respectfully push back on that, I would say that we have and are supportive of Ukraine broadly.
Why can't you specifically support this operation?
Sure. So, if you'd let me finish. So, when it comes to Kursk, we have an understanding from what President Zelensky laid out that they want to create a buffer zone. We are still working on with Ukraine on how that fits into their strategic objectives on the battlefield itself. When we feel confident on that, we have a better understanding of how that all knits together. I'm happy to read out more, but right now we're still working and still have some questions, and we're getting that back. And the secretary is going to engage again with Minister Umerov. Yeah, I understand these things take time.
Sabrina Singh is the Pentagon Deputy Press Secretary, taking questions at her news conference at the Pentagon. And an Associated Press article reads, the Biden administration will send about $125 million in new military aid to Ukraine, U.S. officials said Thursday, even as Washington works to get a better understanding of Kyiv's incursion into Russia and how it advances the broader battlefield goals more than 2 years into the war. Thanks for listening to Washington Today. Subscribe to C-SPAN's free evening newsletter, Word for Word, and you'll get the stories making headlines in Washington sent to your inbox every day. Sign up at cspan.org/connect. Have a good night. We'll